more.
Glorious day, fellow traveler. Welcome to Science and God with Dr. G. That's me, Dr. Michael Gillen, physicist, astronomer, mathematician, and Christian. That's right, living, breathing evidence that science and Christianity are not mortal enemies, but good friends. Actually, an awesome power couple. Well, today I have a really special guest with me, and I can't wait for you to get to know her. Her name is Dr. Elaine Howard Eklund, and she is a highly respected sociologist. She holds the Herbert S. Autry Chair in Social Sciences at Rice University. She also directs the university's world-renowned Religion and Public Life program. Now, Dr. Eklund is particularly famous for the research she's done on the relationship between science and religion. And that's why I'm so excited about talking with her today. So, Dr. Eklund, Elaine, welcome to Science Plus God. I am just delighted to have you here with us today.
Oh, it's great to be with you. It's such a privilege to be with you today.
Well, thank you so much. We've got so much to get into, and I know you're on a tight schedule, so I want to make sure we fit it all in. I always like to ask the basic question, because this is Science Plus God. As a girl, did you have any kind of a religious upbringing? And if so, what was that?
Yeah, I was raised in a Baptist home. It's funny, these denominational differences don't seem to make so much difference now. But when I was growing up, I was raised primarily by my grandparents. They were very distinctively Baptists. So when people came like door to door, we had Jehovah's Witnesses in our community who would come door to door proselytizing. And my grandmother would open the door for them. She was very polite, a rural person, and wouldn't say, we don't agree with your faith or we're a different kind of Christian. She would say, we're Baptists. We don't need another religion. So it's kind of, it gives you a sense of that very deep Baptist identity, which I just don't think we find. I know as a sociologist of religion, we don't find that as much anymore, but that was how it was for me.
And at what point in your life did you make any kind of decision about the religion you wanted to live by?
I would say that I was pretty much culturally involved in the Baptist church that we were part of, pretty much through my high school years, a little bit less so in my high school years, but I became very involved in a university Christian fellowship where I was an undergraduate student at Cornell University in my late teens, early 20s. And that for then, you know, faith became much more of a personal kind of a way of life and belief system for me in ways it wasn't really, you know, when I was a child.
And I forgot, that's right. You're a fellow Cornelian. Go Big Red, right?
Oh, I'm what they call mono school, if I may. So I have an undergraduate master's degree and PhD from Cornell University. So I just kind of couldn't get enough of Cornell University. So,
well, you know what? It's a beautiful university, the setting, right? It's just amazing. But then you became interested in becoming a scientist, and in particular, a sociologist. So how did that happen? And can you explain sociology to people who may not know what that is exactly?
Yeah, so sociologists study groups. So we have as a kind of presupposition of our discipline, the idea that group and organizational dynamics are different and can be studied self-consciously above and beyond just the sum of the individuals in a group. Mm. And I think as people, we intuitively have some sense of that. So you know that you might think something or you might do something that's different when you're by yourself than when you become, you know, part of your scientific community or your church or your civic club or your workplace. And those, we often talk about the cultures of groups or the identities of groups. And those are the kinds of things that sociologists study. I was always interested in science. I was raised on a farm in upstate New York, And I love the natural world. I did a lot of walking in the woods as a kid by myself. And so I always loved the natural world, loved science. I'm also a very social person. And so I think when, I started doing academic work, I thought, wow, you know, using scientific methods and tools to study people really appealed to me somehow.
So how exactly did you become interested in particular in exploring the relationship between science and religion?
So there's kind of different versions of answers to questions like that. There's the kind of like academic answer, which is, you know, all my vast reading led me to believe that there was a real gap in knowledge that I needed to fill. And that's partly true. But there's also a kind of practical matter, which is that my husband and I are both academics, and we're trying to get jobs at the same place. And I got this idea that if I raised a grant money, that I could essentially, you know, go someplace and say, look, I have this grant, give me an office and hire me here. Maybe this is not the answer you wanted, but this is the truth. And so I was thinking about topics that I could study, and interestingly, that might, you know, be appealing to foundations or government grant agencies. And I had always been interested in science and the scientific community. And I said, you know, I wonder if anyone has ever done a big study of what the scientific population thinks about religion. This was 2004, 2005, when Richard Dawkins, the God delusion was really coming onto the scene, when there were the school board cases about teaching evolution versus intelligent design in schools. And so there was kind of a national conversation that was going on. And I thought, I could do that. I could actually do a sociological study looking at what a large group of scientists think about religion and ethics and values and those kinds of things. And I started looking around and I realized no one had really done that. And that sounds like something someone might fund. And so,
hey, those are the realities of life, right, Elaine? I mean, we all have to put food on the table, including academics. Yeah. So why not?
And it really, so I hate to tell that story out loud, but it's a true story. It doesn't sound like all imaginative and creative. But then once I did get that first grant, which was from the John Templeton Foundation, I then became really genuinely interested in the topics and just saw the value of studying the scientific community and what they think about religion, really using social science methods to turn a research lens on scientists themselves. I also then started thinking about the stereotypes that people of faith have about science and scientists and the potentially negative, very negative consequences of those stereotypes. And so then have turned a research lens on trying to understand how different groups of religious people understand science and different scientific technologies that are potentially controversial. And so that has become a whole side research agenda of our team as well.
Wow. I mean, I don't even know where to begin to start mining what you just said. But Elaine, let's start digging in a little bit into all this voluminous research, profound research you've done. And thank goodness you decided you wanted to do that, because nobody else, in fact, has done it. And it's such a hot button issue right now. Let's start with, I guess, basics. How religious are scientists as a rule? What have you found?
Well, it depends on whether you view the cup half empty or half full. So, according to more expansive definitions of religion, about 50% of U.S. scientists consider themselves religious. But what's interesting is they tend to, say, if you're looking from a Christian standpoint, attend church less, be less likely to read the Bible, you know, so sort of these kinds of technical religious practices. But it's not the case at all that most of them are convinced atheists. Those who consider themselves atheists often have a sense of the spiritual other that's outside of themselves, think spirituality is really important, are deeply critical of the few very loud atheist scientists who get so much press and tend to be both view religious people very negatively and are viewed negatively by religious people. My tagline is always, scientists are more religious than we might think, but they're also religiously different than we might think. They tend to value a kind of, how shall we say, consonance with their scientific identities. So everyday people don't have any problem being inconsistent. So people are like, you know, it's the kind of like, okay, I have a Big Mac and a Diet Coke, right? Like, we just don't, like, yeah, that's kind of inconsistent. But we don't, it's not something social scientists show that everyday people are not super concerned about how consistent their identities are, which leads to all kinds of problems. Scientists as a people group tend to really value what I might call identity consistency. So they want their religion and their religious ideas to be consonant and consistent with their scientific ideas. And so I think there are probably some people who are leaders in their churches who are scientists who also consider themselves a little bit agnostic. Because if you ask a scientist, you know, are you certain that you believe in God? Well, they'll say, there's more evidence than less evidence for me of God, but I'm not certain I believe in anything because nothing is ever conclusively proven. So, I mean, I think that they would get really hung up on that idea of certainty in ways that those in the general public wouldn't.
Yeah, that's typical. We scientists tend to be very kind of hard-nosed about the conclusions we come to. So that makes perfectly good sense to me. You know, it is interesting because even among these outspoken atheists, there is disagreement about their sense of the spiritual world. I mean, Sam Harris, for example, has come out and said he's very spiritual, even though he's one of these outspoken atheists. And I remember when I was at Cornell, Carl Sagan was one of my professors. I took some courses in exobiology from him. And he was an agnostic, I think. He never really made it clear, but I think he was probably an agnostic. I remember him giving a lecture once. This is a huge crowd in the audience. And he used the words awe and majesty, the awe and majesty of the cosmos. And do you know, Elaine, that some scientist at the Q&A afterwards stood up and busted his chops about using those words? He says, well, you know, those are not scientific terms, you know, Professor Sagan, you know, and it was like, I think it was just Sagan's way of saying that he did feel a kind of a sense of awe and almost spirituality about this universe he had spent his whole life studying.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, scientists, I think at this point in time, are even more comfortable acknowledging that there may be something outside of themselves or something different that science cannot exactly attend to. So scientists, especially in more recent decades, I think are more comfortable acknowledging that sense of awe and wonder and mystery, and in some ways acknowledging the limits of science, even in the, you know, almost couple of decades that I've been studying the scientific community, there's a sense that there's been some movement in the scientific community to acknowledging different types of knowledge outside of science, to acknowledging that science doesn't have an answer to everything, and especially acknowledging that they need to do more to learn how to interact with the religious public, and they just need to be more sensitive to concerns that particular people groups have about science. So I do sense that there is a kind of change afoot in how the scientific community views itself, particularly the scientific community in the U.S.
No, I think you're spot on that. I also wanted to go back to something you had mentioned earlier that I really resonated when you said about it being really important to scientists that their scientific training is consistent with their religious beliefs. I totally identify with that, Elaine, because in my early days as I was exploring Christianity, it was really important for me for that to be the case. And I said to myself in my head, if at any point along the way as I'm exploring Christianity, if there's an inconsistency, it's game over. I'm going to stick with my science and I'm going to stick with my atheism. So it was really interesting that you found that to be a general trait among scientists, whether they're religious or not, huh?
I think that's exactly right. The other thing that scientists do, though, is if they can't achieve consistency, they do seem to go towards compartmentalization. So there's a whole group of scientists from our studies who definitely see their scientific work is in a very separate compartment from their faith or their religious beliefs or their religious participation.
Now, what about the reverse? You've interviewed a lot of Christians, for example, and gotten a sense of how they generally view science. What are the headlines on that? What have you discovered about that?
Yeah, our team at Rice University has done some of the largest studies of religious communities, as well as general population studies that, you know, of people who are all kinds of persuasions, faith and no faith. So we have found pretty powerfully that religious people value science. And I think that's a headline that scientists need to know, that sometimes scientists in their conversations and in their outreach to the public think that, you know, religious people are all out to get them, just as, you know, religious people and Christians in particular think scientists are out to eat young Christian children for lunch, that, you know, it goes the other way as well, very powerfully, that there is a sense where people of faith really love science. I mean, we do these studies, for example, where we ask people, you know, a big question related to social distances, like who would you have your child marry or partner with long term? And if people say on these surveys that, yeah, I have no problem if my child would marry a scientist, then that's a measure of respect and a lack of social distance and a desire to really holding that career in high esteem. So there's one sense where the religious public holds science and scientists in high esteem. There's another sense, and I think this is in part because of the misconceptions about scientists' own religiosity, where certain groups of religious people really mistrust scientists. They may trust science and love science and want medical science to bring cures for cancer or vaccinations, but they think that scientists sometimes are morally culpable, that they don't reflect enough on the implications of their scientific work, that they don't care enough about the broader society, that they're very other. And, you know, when you give school children pictures and ask them to draw a scientist, they almost always think that the person is a man, that the person's wearing a white coat, you know, that scientists maybe are people who are responsible for sort of science fiction-y kinds of things that will put the world asunder. And that scientists are maybe not as morally reflective about the implications of their scientific work as they need to be.
Huge distinction between science and scientists. Mm-hmm. And I'm really fascinated to hear that you've discovered this, because I think it is true. After all, I mean, you can revere the scientific method. Okay, I think it's the most brilliant technique we've ever come up with to explore and to explain rationally the universe. And yet, scientists are just human and they're fallible. And, you know, there's plenty of evidence that sometimes their own biases will sneak in and corrupt their research and so forth. So that result makes a whole lot of sense. But I'm really encouraged, Elaine, that you're finding that religious people in general do respect science. And I think it's borne out even with this podcast. I mean, we just started this podcast a little over a year ago, maybe about a year and a half ago. And it has just become hugely popular all over the world. And, you know, we all want, right? And we all wondered, well, you know, science and God, I mean, is that going to sell, as it were? Is that going to be popular? Is that going to be palatable to people, both scientists and religious people who are maybe not scientific? Well, the popularity of this podcast bears out your relationship. Just to switch up a little bit, Elaine, some years ago, I wrote a book called Can a Smart Person Believe in God? And I made the case that atheism is a religion because it's based on axiomatic beliefs that can't be proven, just like every other religion. And I even talked about the various denominations of atheism. And then I saw that your latest book is called Varieties of Atheism in Science. And I went, whoa, okay. So I'm really curious, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, no, that's been one of my favorite things to write about so far. So David Johnson is my co-author on that book, and he and I had done some studies of scientists' views about religion in different national contexts. And I would say before I started those studies, as a sociologist of religion myself, who study lots of religious communities, if you'd asked me, are there lots of ways of being religious and being a scientist? I would have said, yes, there's lots of different ways of being a religion and a scientist. You know, now let me study them and show you all the ways. Let me count the ways. But if you had asked me, you know, are there lots of ways of being an atheist and being a scientist? I would have said, nope, you know, atheism just is, you don't believe in God. There's not like different ways of being it. It's just a particular state of mind or being. I was so wrong, which I love when that happens as a researcher. So I explained a little bit earlier that, you know, there are people that I ran across who, you know, say they're atheists, who are in the science community, they say they're atheists, but yet they still go to church. And so we started to investigate whether or not there were other types of atheists in the scientific community. And we found that there are, as in the words of one of our respondents, religious atheists. You know, he said, I'm a religious atheist. I love the ritual. I love the church. I love the high holidays. I love all of it. And I'm, you know, even one of the folks was a cantor in the congregation. It's like deeply involved and very committed, and yet was a very convinced atheist. There is another group of atheists, quite large in certain pieces of the UK and the US, atheist scientists who see themselves as being very deeply spiritual and actually distinguish themselves from what they call modernist atheists, atheists who do not want anything to do with any form of religion or religious people and really think that science is the only way of knowing. And even those atheists who are modernist atheists, who we might think are most like someone like Richard Dawkins, actually are very critical of some of the so-called new atheist attempts to be very negative towards religion and religious people, and think that those attempts do nothing to serve public science, to serve the public's trust and acceptance of science and scientific methods and findings. And so we found these big buckets of different types of atheists, the religious atheists, the spiritual atheists, the modernist atheists. And in that book, we try to really make their stories accessible. And we wrote that book for the scientific community, but we also wrote the book for communities of faith where the 85% of the world who is committed to a religion, and many of whom who are Christians, who really, I think, don't know the true story of what scientists think about religion, and especially have stereotypes and negative tendencies towards atheist scientists. So we wrote that book for them as well.
I'm so glad that you did too, Elaine. Just a few more questions, and that is, when you were talking to the scientists and the religious people, did you get a sense that they're aware that maybe that relationship is broken and that it can be improved? And did you get a sense that they wished to be a part of helping to improve that relationship? Or was it just off their radar and not something that they think about?
I do think as a sociologist that social relationships are extremely important. And I think we know that deeply as human beings, and especially during the pandemic, as so many have experienced so much isolation, that's become even more apparent how much we need one another. So if a scientist, you know, has religious folks in their background or their present reality, I do think that they're much more open to the idea that the scientific community as a whole ought to be doing a better job getting to know and communicating with religious people. It can feel sometimes when you're in the academy like no one's really religious, because the academy is one of the institutions in society that tends to be quite secular. But that's not the case. We pointed out that there are more religious people in the academy and academic science than you might think. Most scientists do have folks in their broader backgrounds and broader circles who are persons of faith, even if they are not themselves. And I think scientists really are starting to see the benefit of forming more positive relationships, you know, for the social good, in particular, increasing the public's trust in science.
Well, that, again, is all very, very encouraging. You've written a lot of books, as I mentioned earlier, I believe, but one of them is called Why Science and Faith Need Each Other, Eight Shared Values That Move Us Beyond Fear. Now, I don't want you to go in through all the eight, but can you just give us a sense of what is that book about? And what are you talking about beyond moving beyond fear? And what are maybe the top two or three of these shared values that can help us get beyond fear?
Thanks for giving me the chance to talk about that. That's my favorite book that I've written, and also by far the hardest. And my students will look at it and go, but it's such a teeny book. It's so short. So why is it the hardest book? It's one of those situations where I felt like I've done all of this research for, at that point, 15 years, and I really felt a moral responsibility to take some of the research and distill it in a way that everyday Christians, the kind of people that I hang out with, who are not part of the scientific or the academic communities, can really understand and use. So it's a book for churches and church leaders, and with a little discussion questions and really teeny chapters. And in both the faith community and in the scientific community, there are these values that bring us together. Things like the kind of awe that you mentioned Carl Sagan talking about and experiencing all those years ago in your course at Cornell University. Awe is a very powerful shared value between the scientific community and the faith community. And there is a sense where scientists and people of faith make really poor decisions if they don't focus on those shared values.
Amen, amen, amen. Here's to more positivity, Elaine. Last question, and that is, Laurel and I have a 22-year-old son. He's part of the Gen Z generation. Do you have any indication from your research how these kids view this relationship between science and religion? Is it going to get better? Should we be optimistic that this new generation will help improve things or not, or what? What should we be thinking about?
Yeah, the one word that I think describes my Gen Z students, and I have a child who's a little bit younger, but you know, is kind of at the tail end of that, is authenticity. They're looking for something that's authentic. And so having scientists tell their own stories of their own faith journeys and the kind of honesty, which I think you've displayed today, is incredibly important for this generation. And so if we're to take the faith and science conversation to the next level, it's not going to be about, you know, kind of esoteric beliefs. It's going to be a kind of, it's going to be marked by authenticity, a kind of genuineness, a kind of telling of one's personal story, and doing faith and doing science as practices that really matter and make a difference in the world.
Wow. I've just found this conversation so uplifting, and I just feel like we've scratched the surface. So let's have another conversation at some point in the future. But right now, Elaine, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for giving us this time. You're an enormously busy person. You're running this huge program. A lot of responsibilities on your shoulder, but thank you for your time. And above all, thank you for everything you've done and are doing to improve the relationship between science and religion. God bless you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a real privilege to talk to you. I've really enjoyed this.
Okay, that's it for now. Remember, this podcast is not a lecture series. It's a conversation. So now it's your turn. Comments, questions, I'm eager to hear from you. There's all kinds of ways you can connect up with me via my social media links in the show notes below. Till next time, I'm still Dr. G saying, I love science, I love God, I also love you, my fellow traveler. Thanks for listening.